Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Hey, welcome and good morning to the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Harry Miller.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kubikin.
And as you know, if you're a regular listener, David and I are two of the attorneys with the Herzog Law Firm. And we're here each Saturday morning from 8 to 9 o'clock to talk to you, bring you some, hopefully, some interesting information and ideas about estate planning, Medicaid planning, asset protection planning, wills and trusts, and estate administration, advanced directives, all that good stuff. Medicaid, home care, very popular concept these days for older people. So we would love to hear your voice and hear your questions over the next hour. And you can reach David and I right here in the studio at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. So welcome. Good morning, Dave. How's everything going?
Good morning, Harry. Everything's good. I mean, it's funny you said studio, but only one of the three of us here is actually in the studio. Ain't that right, Ben?
Well, that is correct, but Harry's actually in his office studio down in North Carolina.
I'm in the office studio here in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Where listen, there's snow. There is snow on the ground. There's snow in the grass. And I was telling Ben earlier before we went on the air that the way North Carolinians deal with snow is much differently than the great Northeast. Let me tell you, the roads are not even coated. Now, there are no snowplows where I live. You know, the sun melts the snow. That's it. We have old-fashioned methods called the sun. So the grass might have a half an inch of coating in the bushes. My wife and I went to the grocery store yesterday on the way home from running some errands. It was packed. You wouldn't believe. You'd think that it was going to be a blizzard of 16 inches or something like that. It was the snowstorm's coming. I'm thinking, really? And everything's closed. Last night on the news, all the weekend sports activities, everything's canceled. even medical facilities like dialysis centers are all closed. They're closed or they're opening 2 hours late. Truly amazing. Everything just shuts down until the sun comes out and melts it.
Well, so Harry, when you know, like Atlanta gets an ice storm or something, they're closed. Mm-hmm. Their highways are a mess, and I think it's because they don't have large piles of salt in silos all over the place on the highways like we do here in North Carolina.
Not only don't they have piles of salt, they don't even have plows. You know.
Well, so in
the entire city of Carborough. Go ahead.
I was saying Carolina, they probably just have piles of dirt that they throw in it or something.
Right. And they, you know, the problem is because it doesn't get as cold down here. Now, you know, like this afternoon, it's going to go up to 45 probably. So, and I think Ben said it was like, 5 degrees or something there today?
Yeah, it's 5 degrees above zero and it's 12 below with a wind chill.
Yeah. And it doesn't, down here, the problem is they can't pre-treat the roads a lot of the time because it doesn't get cold enough in the pre-treating stuff they put on. It doesn't take hold or do anything. So then you get, you know, a mess of ice, which is really a serious problem. And the only plows are like on the main highways, the interstates and the state highways. And up here where we live, this entire community, which is probably 1,200 homes scattered around like 1,000 acres, there isn't a single plow anywhere.
Do you own a snow shovel?
I'm not sure. I have to look in the garage. I don't know if I brought one down here.
Problem to have. My goodness.
I really don't know. There might be one out there. I'd have to look. If I have one, I've never used it. I can tell you that. Anyway.
Well, so, Harry, you've been in Carolina for a little bit, and we just had our week of webinars. And, so 2 p.m. every day for a week, every month, we'll talk about a bunch of different topics. One of the ones I did, which caused me to then email you, was a topic called What to Do When a Loved One Dies. And that webinar basically goes through the different steps you know, whether it's a probate because there's a will and we need to administer mm-hmm. assets, or if there's no will, an administration, and what do we do with this? What do we do with that? Okay, now we're in charge. Now we have an executor. Who gets the painting, right? What do we do with these bank accounts? And it all depends on what the will says. And a lot of times, our wills, which talk about, you know, intangible property and money and stuff like that and bank accounts, also will touch on tangible personal property. And I know you've had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of clients over the years who have said, well, you know, I'd like, you know, my wedding ring to go to my daughter. I'd like the swatch to go to my son, or what have you. And we often will, you know, advise them, maybe you want to do like a gift letter or something. And I thought, after seeing that Bob Dylan just sold his repertoire of songs for about $200 million, you know what? There's assets out there that we normally don't talk about. We're always so focused on the long-term care stuff, the meat and potatoes estate planning, who gets my stuff. When it comes to personal property or intellectual property, I think it's worth a discussion, and I'd like to start that discussion.
Okay. Yeah, well, and these kinds of things, personal items, are the things that often cause a lot of really disharmony and unhappiness among families. Because, you know, as I always say, money is easy to divide. You know, it always fits. It never has to be returned. And you can divide money or securities or mutual funds or anything like that in equal shares, and it's all the same. But, you know, a mother only has one wedding ring, and dad only has, you know, one gold watch, or unless he's like me and he has 30 watches because he collects watches. Although they're not expensive watches. But in any event, these are the things that kids remember and want. So dividing property can be a real serious problem. One thing we do in all of our estate plans, and we give our clients a sample form of a letter in which they can set down, you know, who gets the pearl necklace, who gets the diamond brooch, all these things. Jewelry is especially hard because it has a tendency sometimes to just disappear, and there's nothing worse than, you know, seeing, you know, your son's wife, your daughter-in-law, walk out wearing your fine pearl necklace that you wanted to go to your granddaughter, and say, oh, you know, it creates problems. So you can make a list of these things, of what they are. Not every single thing you own, but the important things. You know, the painting over the mantle, the clock, the, you know, the family memorabilia and things like that. So that's one way of doing it. Now, I don't know what your experience is, but in my experience, I would say less than half of our clients actually do such a letter. But that way we can put in the will some language that says, you know, look, I may leave a letter or a memorandum of personal items that I want to be distributed by my executor to certain people. And, you know, here's what I want. Now, it's technically not part of the will, although I have recently seen some cases in which that document was actually upheld and really treated as part of the will. And in our case, they're witnessed. They're not attested to in the same way a will is. But, you know, in lots of instances, those things will carry out. So let's say you didn't leave a letter. How are we going to divide up the stuff? Okay, there's a great book. Excuse me. There's a great book I bought about 25 years ago that was published, I think, by the University of Minnesota Law School. It was called "Who Gets Grandma's Yellow Pie Plate?" All right, and everybody remembers Grandma's pumpkin pies or apple pies at Thanksgiving, and blah 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 blah. And there's three kids, and there's obviously only one pie plate. And so what are we going to do with it? You know, if you put it in a garage sale, you might get $5 for it, maybe not even that. So a lot of these things have no monetary value to people, but they have tremendous intrinsic, you know, sentimental value. So what are the suggestions there? We can, if mom put the pie plate on a list and gave it to her daughter, who was a, you know, who's a great cook and a great baker, that might make sense to everybody else. Absent that, how do you divide up stuff? Well,
a couple of ways. We take turns using the system of primogeniture from the oldest to the youngest. We take turns and go around the room, and everybody picks something, you know. That works out okay, except, you know, if a sunny boy picks a table that's worth about $25 and his sister picks a diamond ring that's worth $5,000, that don't go over so big, right? Because we want to have shares of what substantially equal value, which is what we put in our will documents. Another good way to do it is to have everybody make a list. Go through the house, have everybody make a list of what they want, right? And so if the stuff that's on your list isn't on anybody else's list, hey, it's yours. And then the stuff that's on more than person's list, you know, we can flip a coin or take turns or do something like that. But it can be a problem if it isn't dealt with up front. I guess that's the point of my discussion here, or my monologue.
You know, Harry, by the way, I think if you, you know, wanted to start reading and recording audiobooks, I think you'd be quite good at it. I could just sit here and listen to you all day. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not being sarcastic at all. Ben, I don't know how you... I mean, I think Harry's got a great voice, and he kind of... Anyway.
I'm sorry. I just woke up from a nap. I'm sorry. What was that? I was just listening to Harry, and then all of a sudden, it was like 10 minutes later. I'm not sure what happened.
The soothing sounds of Harry Miller. Well, Harry, so people out there are going to say, wait a minute. We got a will.
I think I put everybody in the audience, all our listeners, to sleep because nobody's calling in this morning.
No, that's all right. So people are going to sit back and say, well, wait a minute. I'm gonna spend, you know, hundreds of dollars on a will or a couple $1,000 on a trust. Those documents you're telling me say where everything goes. Why do I need a side letter? Let me put in my will in that section that deals with tangible personal property. Let me put where everything's going to go. I'm going to put the lamp on there. I'm going to put my ring.
Mm-hmm.
Put the table. I'm going to say everything else they could divide as they see fit. Roughly, the ledger should equal a third, or you don't agree, sell it, split the proceeds. Yeah, that's kind of the default, Harry, but the problem is if you list it all in your will, and then you change your mind as to who gets your lamp that's worth $30. Are you calling Harry Miller to schedule an appointment to redo your will? Are you paying more money because you changed your mind on the lamp? And one of the good parts about like a side letter is you can do a new side letter and you can have witnesses. You could have your neighbors be witnesses. You don't have to come into the office, although, you know, we certainly want an updated copy of those letters as you update them. But
we want an original, We want an original in the file because sometimes, you know, these letters, they're stuck in the drawer and they tend to disappear. So you want to make sure your lawyer has an original signed copy of your letter or your memorandum, that's for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Right, but, you know, one of the things you mentioned was, well, it's not part of the will. It's a side letter. It doesn't meet the testamentary requirements for, you know, due execution of a will. But it tells everybody what you wanted, which is really important. And however, you know, like what did Mom want? Well, Mom didn't want that. Well, here's the letter that Mom signed that she left in her file with Harry and Dave and Jane Marie. This is exactly what she wanted. So let's abide by her wishes. But that kind of presupposes that everyone's going to play ball. Because if someone says, well, I don't care what that letter says, the will says we split everything equally, and that diamond ring is part of everything. I don't care that Mom said it goes to Julie. Then you're going to have an issue. And so oftentimes, Harry and I had this exact conversation yesterday in Kingston with someone because they said, okay, now what do I do with my personal property? What do I do with my stuff? And I said, well, three options. Side letter, like Harry just mentioned, says it all out. You could be as detailed as you want. Up to you. You can redo it. You know, someone came over for Thanksgiving. They said, oh, I really like that painting. Change your letter. Make sure they get it. That's fine.
Right.
If you are sensing that your kids that barely talk are going to definitely not see eye to eye on things, or in fact, they may even go against your wishes, we may need to put in the will. We may need to assign personal property to your trust and amend the trust to reflect where things go because, you know, that's the fact pattern. The kids don't get along, and it's really important to you that this thing goes to your grandchild, perhaps, or your great niece who you always had a connection with, you want to leave them something of personal value. Another choice, though, Harry, well, there's two more choices out there. One is you give things during your life. Okay, so you want to see people benefit from things. You can, you know, give someone that watch or that ring over time. The last one that I kind of like, which I'd love your opinion on, Harry, is you could always say to your daughter or to your granddaughter or grandson or whoever, write a letter. You know, Timmy, I'm leaving you this painting that is in my living room. It is now yours. Thank you for letting me borrow it for the rest of my life. And Timmy can sign that thing to say, yes, I acknowledge receiving this painting. I'd like it to stay in your house with you until your death. Because when grandma dies, the question would be, Harry, did she own that painting? Is it subject to her will or is it subject to the laws of New York? And I'd argue, well, she already gave it, and we have proof that she gave it. So, you know, we're not taking things off the wall at grandma's house while she's still alive. That's weird. But we also can ensure things go to the right people.
They do, particularly when you leave something there. And I mean, you know, a gift is generally completed, as in many things, by delivery, like a deed is completed by delivery. So if you, let me say this. This is especially important what David is saying, particularly where something is actually worth some money, okay? You know, if you have, you know, a nice little diamond necklace or a tennis bracelet that costs, you know, a couple hundred or even a couple $1,000s, But if you have an antique piece of jewelry, you know, that might be worth $10,000 or $15,000 or even $50,000, and some people have these things, you want to make darn sure that it's clear where you want that to go. All right. If you have a painting, you know, that you could sell in the, you know, for an auction for $1,500, if you have clients who have, you know, I've had clients over the years who have had, you know, people who have actually left Europe and had folks who had left Germany and Austria during the Holocaust and had actually pretty valuable German impressionistic paintings that were literally worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. These things, if you have something that's really worth some big bucks, you really want to, you're giving it to somebody. A gift letter that David was just describing is really critically important. I'm giving you this. In the meantime, it's going to stay in my house, but when I stop breathing, it's yours. That's critically important for anything that has value. If you have, you know, we have clients who have collections of things, who have collected stamps or coins. this kind of stuff is not your ordinary tangible personal property, you know, like the contents of your house. There are things, antique furniture isn't worth much of anything right now, but years ago it was worth quite a bit of money. And, you know, a 200-year-old chest that was made in Boston or in Philadelphia would have been worth tens of thousands of dollars today. You know, it's all called brown furniture. Maybe it'll come back, maybe it won't. Jewelry always retains value. Anything from the Civil War or, you know, American Indian art has enormous value. Chinese Asian art has enormous value these days. Anything, you know, related, you know, as I said, with the Civil War, but these kinds of things. And everybody, once in a while, everybody, you know, you go through the attic and sometimes people have this stuff, they didn't even know what it is. So one thing I always recommend, these things really ought to be appraised and insured. And virtually no one does that. Even with jewelry. Jewelry is very expensive to insure on your homeowner's policy separately from anything else. And then when they're gone, you know, that's it. You don't get anything for them. But it is really important that your stuff go where you want it to, because these are all obviously one-of-a-kind items, and they can get lost in the shuffle very easily.
You know, Harry, where we've had the most intense of estate litigations, where the most raw emotion comes out of our clients or our opponents, it's usually not money. I mean, certainly if someone's contesting a will because they were left out, it is about money. They want a percentage of an estate. But I know I've had, a fact pattern where dad, he would make his own mosaic pieces of art, and he would keep it around his shop, his business, and all the kids wanted it. And we had to put provisions in about how there would be essentially a lottery system for it, like a little, you know, whoever goes first, then goes last on that next round, and everyone can pick the mosaic right. that they want. And even with that language, I remember Jane Marie had quite the time with the estate after Dad passed away, because people weren't, oh, that's not what he wanted. Well, that's what he wanted, because when he met with me, that's what he said, and we had witnesses and the whole thing. So I know you've had one where a litigation was basically settled, but the son, who was not our client, the two daughters were our client, he really wanted Mom's sweatshirt.
Oh, my God. Hey, literally.
You know, you remember that one?
We went on for over a year. We represented the executors, who were, as David said, two of the daughters, and the son, who was sort of the black sheep of the... This went on and on. Yeah, with an Irish knit sweater that Mom had brought back from someplace in Ireland years ago. And the son had an attorney also in the Capital District. It went on and on and on. And I know for a fact that probably... I know several thousand dollars of fees, of legal fees, on both sides, you know, going back and forth about this sweater, which, you know, had...
An expensive sweater now, Harry. It's an expensive
sweater. Well, and because I said at one point to the executor daughters, I said, did your mother bring this back for your brother? She said, no, it was her sweater. And then she said, yeah, you know, it won't even fit his wife because, you know... It was wrong, you know. Well, I don't know, and I think, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, when families, these things happen, sometimes kids revert to, I hate to say, the kids revert to when they were kids, and unfortunately, the parents are gone. There's nobody to put them in time out, and all these situations arise. Where old feelings. I had another situation once where the two sisters were fighting over what to do. This was like a summer camp someplace, and one wanted to sell it, one wanted to buy it, one didn't, and they went on and on and on, and it resulted in litigation to dispose of the camp. And the one sister said, she said, I know exactly why she's doing this. And I said, why? She said, because I made the cheerleading squad and she didn't.
Well,
I mean, it really, so, sometimes it's something as silly as that. And she said, you know, she never got over it. And now she's fussing about this. And maybe that wasn't the reason. I don't know. But it was good an explanation as I heard from anyone in the course of the litigation.
Well, it's essentially a divorce between these kids. And right. A lot of times it's, I want this sweater because... You want that sweater. So if you want it, no, I want it. And, you know, we're not therapists. We're not psychiatrists. We're not able to kind of get into those deep-rooted issues between right. siblings or family members.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
But our job is to make sure that, you know, Mom's estate goes the way Mom wanted it to. And there's lots of different options there. You can be our first caller by calling 518-476-5900. Harry. Just going to say one thing because it ties in really well. And in fact, Janice, one of our estate administration paralegals, was in with a client mm-hmm. and I kind of popped in and caught the conversation. So what are you guys talking about? And the client was asking us, Harry, what our thoughts were about safe deposit boxes. And, you know, Janice, who's, you know, if you want her blood to boil, mention that there's a safe deposit box in one of her estates because there's so many hoops to jump through. But the reason for those hoops has everything to do with exactly what we've been talking about. Because if you got that diamond ring that you're leaving to your daughter and you left it in the safe deposit box and someone else has access to it and there's no eyes on that, well, maybe that ring doesn't exist anymore because someone opened up that box. So right. what the law says is, hey, you know, when it comes to safe deposit box, if there's a death, And the bank knows about it, you know, there might be an inventory of that box, even if Dad's on that box too, because, well, maybe Mom had a will that specifically gave a piece of something that's in that box to somebody. So there's all these precautions. And it's because, you know, the possession is 9/10 of the law. And unless you say, well, I didn't possess it anymore, I already gave it to somebody else, as Harry was mentioning earlier, you run into all sorts of problems.
It's not, safe deposit boxes are, here's the problem. Different banks have different rules about when they freeze a box or not. You know, when I started practicing law in the mid-1970s, there must have been this thing that people just rented safe deposit box and filled them full of cash or diamonds or gold or something, because in the late 70s, when Jim Riley and I were young lawyers, you couldn't open a safe deposit box in New York State without a member. The attorney for the state tax department had to be present at the box opening. Can you imagine that? It would take weeks to schedule an appointment because there are only so many attorneys who work at the state tax department, and they had to physically come down and to the box at Key Bank or Albany Savings Bank, and they would stand there and watch you open the box. And 99 of 100 boxes are just full of junk, old paper stuff that isn't worth anything.
Everyone puts their deed in their safe deposit box, but guess what? The county has your deed too, guys.
It's recorded. Doesn't matter if you lose it. Okay. Your insurance policies. I mean, you can still collect the life insurance even if you lost the policy, as long as you paid all the premiums. But it's the stuff that people do. Boxes are very hard to deal with. And then, if you can't put five people on a box, but, you ought to be able to get to the box. We ought to be able to get to the box without doing some type of an administration proceeding or probate proceeding to get into the box, because it's just an unnecessary expense. And, but very often, even though someone else is on the box, mom and two of the kids are on the box, some banks will freeze the box even if one person dies, even though the other person is supposed to still have access to the boxes. I don't know. My solution to that with my own mother years ago in Pennsylvania was she had two safe deposit boxes at two different banks. So I put me and my two sisters, there were only three other three of us, me and my sisters owned the box. It was our box, all right? And my mother was a deputy, so she could go to the bank, and she had all the keys, all right? But when she passed away, the box was ours. She was never on the box as an owner, and therefore the three of us went to the box, and we opened it up. So,
that's pretty smart.
That works in some situations, because the deputy can have the keys and get into the box. It doesn't matter. They don't need to know whose stuff is in the box. It's none of their business. But that's one way of solving the problem. Are we, I think we may be coming up on the, are we, no, we're doing a different break now or,
no,
not, or as, are we doing a half hour break?
As a matter of fact, Harry, we're at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take our break right here. We'll be back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Harry, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office, 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Well, welcome back to the second half of the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Harry Miller.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kubikin. Harry and I were talking this first half hour about personal property, what we'll call tangible personal property, things you can touch, and why you want to maybe make special arrangements for that special ring or painting, whether it's valuable or it's priceless. it certainly is important. And the question is, do we, you know, put it in your legal documents, which means if you change your mind, we're changing your legal documents. Do we go with, I guess I would call it quasi-legal documentary, a side letter that's appropriately right. witnessed but still not part of your will, to just kind of let the world know what you want to have happen. I do want to change gears, though, for a moment away from that, even though there's a whole world of intellectual property and you know, sometimes people are not buying the art. They're producing the art. They're not buying the music. They're producing the music. But for a moment, just because if we get some calls here at 476-5900, we'll probably get sidetracked. But this is incredibly important. So Harry Kingston client, I met with him and his wife early last year. We talked about trusts. He has a couple properties, a couple kids, some money, one of the like tailor-made Medicaid plan, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was really struggling with the idea of revocable or irrevocable. And to the best of my ability, explaining what these words mean legally and how with a Medicaid trust, you really are still in control of everything. The income beneficiary of everything. He kind of struggled with it. He said, you know, we'll talk again. We'll talk again. I met with him two or three times with his wife and then nothing. And then, I heard back from him. And unfortunately it was because, his wife had passed away and it was not, expected. Definitely a very big, deal for him and his family. And we met again and I said, you know, sir, when we talked before, we had a little wiggle room. We had some room for error. We had, you know, your most valuable asset was your wife, and her most valuable asset was you. Because if there was a catastrophic event, if there was a need for a nursing home, if there was a stroke, if there was even home care, we knew we could move things around between spouses because the Medicaid rules, you know, allow that. But it's a safety net. It's a just in case because things happen to spouses too. We all get older at the same time. So again, went kind of back and forth. He's still not sure. And, you know, we are not the type of firm that's going to, you know, force anyone to do anything. We can't, but we're not even going to, put pressure on people. Take all the time you need, right? We're here when you need us. That's how our firm operates. Well, 2 days ago, we got an email from this gentleman. He said, and I knew his health wasn't very good, said, I'm getting surgery next week. It's rather extensive. I'm concerned about it. when can I come in to sign something? And as luck had it, yesterday I was in Kingston. So I said, you know what? I'm going to move some things around. Can I see at 11? He came in at 11 with his daughter. Now, he wasn't good making decisions, Harry, when it was, you know, we're talking about things that may happen in the future. He wasn't good at seeing that. He felt pressured in that environment talking about things. You better believe signing things a week before a major operation, he was having difficulties with all this.
It's the worst time to do estate planning. Absolutely worst. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And about an hour and a half later, we had all the documents signed and you know, there were moments of, you know, a minute of pause where he's just eyes closed thinking about, I'm sure, all sorts of things and how life has changed for himself. But things like a power of attorney, right, that allow his daughter to do things while he's getting this procedure afterwards. And I said to him, I said, look, we could do a will, we could do a revocable trust, and that's going to take care of who gets things if the surgery doesn't work and things go bad. But I am far more concerned about what if things go good or mediocre, because if the surgery does what it's supposed to, he's going to be on the mend for some time. He's a rather elderly gentleman, although I wouldn't say he's old, but he's up there. So we say it all the time, right? Death is kind of easy. It's a line in the sand, and we know what happens procedurally afterwards. But bad living, Harry, that's tough. And we're not saying, you know, we have to expect bad living. We just need to be prepared for it with a power of attorney or a this kind of trust or that kind of trust or a will. And the time to do it, you hit it out of the park. The time to do it isn't, you know, 104 hours before your operation, guys, right? It's now, because you never know. I love your thoughts.
It is time and again. And unfortunately, the people that operate like this, who do make these decisions, it's called crisis management, because they're not essentially good decision makers to begin with. They're not good at planning in advance, and for a variety of reasons.
Or they're just deliberate, Harry. Or they just have a process and they don't want to feel rushed. He made the decisions. In fact, he retained us long ago. It was by the time,
pen to paper. It sounds like this went on for certainly months and maybe a year or more. And so over that period of time, even the most hesitant person should be able to come to some conclusions and realize that it's tough. But making decisions medically, it used to be the people want to come in and do a will. They were either going to the hospital within the next 30 days, or else they were traveling, getting on an airplane or something like that, and they were concerned about having an accident or something like that. And it's just, those are not the times to do this kind of planning. We need to do it early on. The crisis, sometimes it's the only thing we can do. We have to do crisis planning. And I think the thing we try to put out and get the message out to people is that almost none of these plans can usually always be reformulated and reamended over time as circumstances dictate. So even in the standpoint of your asset, your irrevocable trust certainly can always be changed as long as you're alive and mentally competent to do that.
Harry, I'm so happy you said that, because the thing that got the document signed was, I said to him, listen, when next week comes and goes and all's well, and you say, Dave, I don't want this Medicaid trust anymore, I said to him, I'll write it down right now. I will amend this trust and restate it to be a revocable trust if you'd like. And I'm not going to charge you for that. But now is not the time to spend hours and hours deliberating over revocable or irrevocable. You got to do one of them. And we got to kind of plan for success. And it's weird, because success in this instance is likely a tremendous amount of long-term care.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Success is usually not synonymous with, home health care aides. That's not usually a success program, but we need to set up. He said, well, what about the 5-year look back? I said, you're absolutely right. There's a 5-year look back period, but success is not long-term care in a nursing home. It's long-term care at home as you recover. Maybe there's some rehab and you finally come home. And
I have a 5-year look back for that, right?
No, look
not currently.
That's right. Right. And we saw a lot of this, Harry, when the pandemic started, where, I don't think this office ever did more healthcare proxies and powers of attorney than we did March through May of 2000. Because
2020, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Everyone needed to have it. We had so many nurses and people, on, I guess, the front lines of caring for patients with COVID, back when no one knew what COVID was exactly. We had nurses all coming in. I need a healthcare proxy, need a power of attorney, just in case. Because it was, it's not like we could just run to the hospital and sign documents for someone. We were shut off from them. And it's just a good idea. You got to plan ahead of time.
I remember we were going down into our parking lot and handing the documents inside the car, flag for the person to sign. We would go down, the lawyer would go down with a secretary or another witness, and because at that point I don't think we could even have clients in the office, right? Everyone was everyone but we got them done, and that was the main thing, because everybody woke up and realized that in these crisis situations, a lot of people don't have documents, they don't have them at all. And the ones who do have them finally dusted them off because they hadn't looked at it in the last 10 or 12 years and realized, oh, my heavens, that's not who I want to make these decisions. No, maybe 10 years ago it was, but it isn't anymore. And
right.
And that generates a whole, people whose kids were, 16, went to, 12, 14 years ago when they made these documents and they had their brother or their cousin or somebody who was their healthcare proxy after their spouse,
And now their children are adults in their late 20s, mid-30s, and they're perfectly capable. And that's who you want to, most people want to carry out these decision-making events for them. And yet people just stick this stuff in a drawer and they don't look at it for years. So, you know.
Dave, Harry, excuse me, we do have a caller. We have Barb from Albany.
Hey, Barb.
Good morning.
Good morning, Harry and David. I'm a client of your firm, and I wanted to thank you all for your advice over the years. But I also wanted to share with your with you and the audience about the list of tangible property. My family got together on the holidays, particularly in Thanksgiving, for the whole weekend. And at one point, my mom was approaching the point in her life where she had to go into assisted living. And she got us all together, and she said, I'm going to walk each one of you through the house, and I want you to pick out what you want. And we each took a turn with her, walked through the house. We made up a list. I was her power of attorney, so I put the list together. We all reviewed it. We worked out the little areas of disagreement that we had. It wasn't a fight or anything, but we worked out any disagreements we had over who got what. We initialed it, and Mom was happy with it. And when it came time for her to go into assisted living, she decided that she wanted us to take what she couldn't take into assisted living. And then the remainder of what was on the list was distributed upon her death. And it went very, very smoothly. And it really was a good way to do things.
It is. It is.
It is.
It's absolutely the best way to do things because the whole family is involved in the process. And your mother was a very, very wise lady. And she obviously understood her children and took everybody through the process. And she did exactly what we try to do with clients. She avoided having a family feud down the road. Absolutely the best thing to do.
Communication is just so important.
A lot of that was due to the advice you give people over the phone. So on behalf of my mom, I would just want to say thank you.
Our pleasure, Barbara.
Thank you.
And thank you for your call.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Harry, there's, you know, I could tell you my family, my parents, in fact, yesterday on my way up from Kingston, I spoke with my mother on the phone for about 45 minutes. And, you know, I don't think other people have these conversations. We were literally talking about, you know, death and arrangements, both long-term care arrangements for a great aunt. We were talking about my parents. We were talking about my grandparents. And I know that other people don't feel comfortable talking about death. I know if I ever have a conversation with my wife about things like planning, not for us, but really for our parents, it's like, I don't want to talk about that. It's, you know, it's going to be depressing. And it's because it is going to be depressing. But it's a fact of life. And just like people, you know, I say this all the time, just like people will designate a beneficiary on life insurance, or designate a beneficiary on their retirement. And no one has a problem doing that, Harry. No one has a problem thinking about death when it's naming a beneficiary on one of those things. But when it's a will, or when it's a side letter, when you're writing down, you know, necklace and someone else's name, you're kind of recognizing that we're not here forever. And it's something everyone already knew, but sometimes it becomes a really difficult conversation to have. And as Barbara mentioned, when that conversation happens, it's incredibly important, and it's an honest conversation people could have. It doesn't mean everyone's got to next Thanksgiving go around the house picking out things, but it's a version of addressing the issue. And sometimes people address it by saying, you know what, we're good. I'm not going to need to have that conversation, and everyone already knows. That's all good. But what we try to avoid, because the worst thing in the world is losing a parent, and then losing a sibling along the way because you guys butt heads over something that could have been, you know, worked out earlier. The emotions are raw. And so when it's kind of worked out ahead of time, man, oh, man, it makes it so much easier.
It absolutely does. These family battles are going on. We have both seen them over the years, fortunately, Barbara's mother was a wise person who understood these things and took care of it while she was still alive. It's planning ahead. It's planning ahead, and trying to not leave a big mess for everybody to clean up after after you're no longer here. It's in my own family, it was my mother was quite the opposite of Barbara's mother. She didn't want to deal with it. I talked to her for a number of years about, with my sisters. I have two sisters, and she just said no. I don't want you guys deal with it. She said it won't be my problem. That's the wrong approach. It's the wrong approach. Now, my sisters and I always got along. I wouldn't say we were particularly close, but we were always on the same page where my mother was concerned. And in terms of dividing up stuff, it never became an issue. In fact, they didn't really. I had to make them take stuff. They didn't want to take stuff. So, but it wasn't a problem in our family, and I knew it wouldn't be a problem. But I still wanted her to make these decisions rather than us. Anyway, it worked out okay. But from my standpoint, it was not the best way to handle it.
Harry, there's one other personal property issue that I want to bring up with you, and that's kind of alluded to a couple minutes ago, which is I actually have a client now. He is a musician and has a lot of recorded music. You're not going to turn on the radio and hear him. Because he's a jazz musician. It's not Mr. Dylan now. But because he's a musician, he said, look, I got a bunch of stuff. I don't know how the world works. Maybe some other musician hears a little bit of my jazz riff and they decide to sample it in their song or an R&B artist is going to use a sample of my thing. I don't know. Do we talk about this? I said, absolutely. We're going to talk about it. Let's put a provision in your documents. Let's assign to your trust all of the rights you have. And he's got a website and this and that, and we're going to cite it a certain way. We had a client that was a Medicaid client many years ago who, he was also a musician, and some of his songs were featured in motion pictures. One of his songs involves a banjo in a movie called Deliverance. Mm-hmm. But the point is, these are assets, mm-hmm. and not everyone is Bob Dylan. Certainly only one person's Bob Dylan, as far as statistically, right? But people can have things. It could be art that's worth something. It could be art that's worthless. It could be intellectual property, books. We have a number of, we've had a run of children's authors who mm-hmm. are our clients now, and they have these books, and you can go on eBay and find my client's children's books. Are they worth something? Are they not? There's publishing rights, and these all need to be.
There's royalty rights. There's copyright, trademark. There's publishing rights. I had a client many years ago who was a writer. He wrote textbooks, and one of his textbooks was like Introduction to French, I think it was, or something, and it was used by virtually every university in the United States. Was if you took Introduction to French or whatever, this was the textbook, and he had royalties that were coming in long after the book. And so, here's the problem in these situations. Very often, the family, whoever the executor, who's the spouse or probably one of the children, doesn't have the requisite background to evaluate, appraise, and distribute and or sell whatever property rights there are here. And so in those situations, I try to incorporate into the documents themselves some at least what we call precatory language, not legally binding, but instructional language. It could be done separate from the document, encouraging people to retain experts to evaluate a library collection. I have a client who has probably one of the most important
collections of historical documents that exist, and they've been sold by major auction houses over the years. That situation, we're going to have a number of different companies at some point who will evaluate the collection and determine the best way to dispose of it. Do you sell it in a lot? Do you sell it in chunks? Sometimes chunks could be worth more than the whole. The other thing, particularly with art collections, I mean, we're not Picasso, but you know, when Picasso died, there were hundreds and hundreds of paintings of his that were sitting in his house or locked up somewhere that had never been sold, and some of them had never even been exhibited. When an artist, when you, there's this concept called blockage. You know, if you dump too much of a particular artist's work on the market at any particular time, and it could be a writer or it could be a song or a singer, you're going to have a depressive effect on the value. All right,
it happened with having
exactly. You know, all of a sudden, there's all this library of unpublished work. If you dump it in a lot, it's going to depress the value of it. And that, particularly as an executor, as a fiduciary, a trustee, your job is to try to certainly maximize the value, or at least not cause a depressive effect on the value of the estate assets.
They're probably still negotiating with Prince, by the way, because, you know, the IRS said, look at this. We have a vault full of unreleased Prince recordings. Oh, my God, it's worth this. And it's, well, the answer is, if you dump it all at once, it's not worth that. If you do an album a year for the next, you know, 80 years, maybe it is worth that much. But, you know, and people are going to sit at home here and say, well, this is great, and it's snowing outside, and I'm just sitting here listening to problems that I'm never going to have because I don't have all that intellectual property. Yeah, you might not. That's all right. But we do have lots of musicians out there, lots of artists out there, lots of authors out there. And you know, it just might be these priceless things that we have that need to be addressed. And it's just planning, because, you know, the default is going to be we're going to look at your will, and if there's a fight, even though you avoided probate on all the financial stuff, Harry, if someone's fighting over the sofa and they really want to take it to the max, we're going to have to probate that will that wasn't going to go through probate, you know, because there's a tangible personal property section of that will that says who gets this jewelry or who gets, you know, this musical instrument or whatever it happens to be. And, you know, like literally the last thing we want to do is probate something because of a non-monetary issue. Because if it's just money, we could put beneficiaries on it, right? If it's just money, we could avoid probate.
We don't need to, ordinarily, we don't have to probate a will to transfer personal property, you know. Even unless there are multiple automobiles, you know. I mean, I had a client, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago, had an extensive collection of automobiles. I mean, had maybe upwards of 200 automobiles that he, it was his hobby. He had them restored and had several showrooms of cars. The car collection itself appraised for several $1 million. Each individual car might have only been worth, you know, 50, 80s. They were the most expensive car might have been a couple $100,000, but the collection itself. And again, the question was, do you sell the whole collection, or do you sell cars individually or whatever? And those are the kinds of decisions we made after we had experts come in and do appraisals of all these automobiles. So it's you know, and most people don't have collections that are worth millions of dollars. But they may have collections that are worth, you know, tens of thousands of dollars or even several hundred thousand dollars. And that in and of itself, you know, there's fewer zeros on the back end, but it doesn't mean that the collection itself is unimportant and it isn't worth preserving and maximizing in terms of its value. And I think that's the point that we're trying to get across here this morning. Because a lot of times people are sitting on these things and they don't really even know they don't even know what they have. That's all. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, my son, Harry, is sitting on a collection of Hot Wheels that he plays with every day. So hopefully those will be worth something one day. I think they got to stay in the box, though. Once it leaves the box, it loses all value.
Keep the boxes. You know, keep the boxes. All those Hess trucks. So you buy a Hess truck every year, you know. Hess trucks from 20, 30 years ago, they're worth several hundred dollars a piece and even more, you know.
Absolutely, they can be. There's my sister-in-law has a Barbie in a box that's extremely expensive, as it turned out. It wasn't at the time. It was just a little gift she got, you know, 30 years ago. You never know. You know, my mother still keeps all of my, like, action figures from when I was a little kid, and I'm like, Mom, please, you know, get rid of them. And she said, well, what if your son wants to play with them and this and that? I'm like, God, you know, we'll get them new toys. I don't know if I want them, you know, holding things that are 35, 40 years old. She says, maybe they might be valuable. Well, if it was a Star Wars toy in the box and the, you know, Millennium Falcon or something, then maybe it would be. But, you know, it's also, you know, obviously it's important to her because it's the emotional piece of it. It's remembering her son when he was little.
Or maybe it was a Honus Wagner baseball card. somebody's auctioning off. I think it was the first year that Tom Brady was a quarterback, and it was like his first football player card. And it's going up for auction. I don't know what it's going to sell for, but I'm pretty sure it's going to sell for a pretty big number.
You know, another week we could talk about that kind of thing because, you know, when I was younger, we used to flip cards or people used to put baseball cards in the spokes of their bike.
You trade them, yeah.
It's all about the pristine condition of these things. They actually have houses that will evaluate your card and rate it as to its how perfectly even the lines are or how pristine the corners are. And then based on that rating, even though it could be a rather dime a dozen card because it's in such good condition. Oh, my goodness. It's crazy.
I
apparently collected at the wrong time because the cards I collected are absolutely worthless. There's gazillions of them out there. Anyway.
Okay. Well, listen, everybody, have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you all next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.